There's nothing that can't be cured with a wink and a fart, and you're listening to WGXC Nicra 90.7 FM.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show, and we have all sorts of songs and sounds and stories for you today. We're going to hear excerpts from the June 20 New York 19 Congressional Candidate Forum from the Tompkins County Democratic Committee with candidates Jamie Chaney, Josh Riley, and Ocean Zotik. Plus, we'll hear new songs from Troy's Jason Wolfman Martin from his Test Signal EP. You can hear his Newsnet song Behind Us Now. And it's also Pollinator Week this week. We'll hear from Grace Nichols, a longtime Capital Region environmental activist, about local bees, plus the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local better weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network. And the moon turns the blood. The stream runs through. And the moon turns the blood. This is the network. Network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
Saturday, June 25th, turn out to the Widow Jane Mine in Rosendale for a performance from Catskill's Brian DeWan. He'll be performing with tape cartridges, a melody djinn, an accordion, an auto harp, and his own voice. Hear one of Catskill's most notorious performers in a unique setting in the Widow Jane Mine in Rosendale, 3 p.m. Saturday, June 25th. Find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided in part by SunCommon, supporting vibrant communities across New York for 15 years, offering custom solar installations for homes, farms, and businesses. Information at suncommon.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of One Universal Media of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. Brendan J. Lyons reports for the Times Union that the focus of the FBI investigation that led to the guilty plea of a Troy council member is shifting to Jason T. Schofield, the Republican Rensselaer County Board of Elections Commissioner, according to multiple sources. GOP employees at the Board of Elections have been recently subpoenaed to testify before a federal grand jury in Albany. The county also recently received a new federal grand jury subpoena for materials related to absentee ballots handled by Schofield last year. Two Rensselaer County election registrars are among the witnesses subpoenaed to testify in front of the grand jury. The actions of Schofield, 42, surfaced in the recent case involving former Troy Council member Kimberly Ash McPherson, who pleaded guilty June 8th to a felony charge in U.S. District Court after admitting she fraudulently submitted absentee ballots in the 2021 primary and general elections. Ash McPherson resigned from the council a day after pleading guilty. According to court documents, Schofield allegedly helped Ash McPherson obtain an absentee ballot through an online portal using the name and date and birth of a voter without, quote, lawful authority, unquote. That absentee ballot was mailed to Ash McPherson's residence and submitted in the Working Families Party primary election that she won prior to being reelected to the city council in the general election. The grand jury subpoena recently served on the county sought records related to more than a half dozen absentee ballot applications, including several obtained through the state's online portal by Schofield. Rensselaer County GOP leaders previously denied knowledge of any fraudulent activity by the party during the 2021 election. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Zach Williams reports in the New York Post that only one of four Republican candidates for governor would admit that Joe Biden was fairly elected president at the debate June 20th. Andrew Giuliani, the son of one of the president's lawyers who has lied about who won the presidential election in 2020, said, and I quote, "I believe that President Trump was reelected, and I think, unfortunately, we've seen one of the greatest crimes in American history committed against our country," end quote. There has been no evidence of widespread voter fraud. Harry Wilson said during the debate, the only candidate who clearly spoke the truth on this issue, and I quote, "Certainly Joe Biden was a duly elected president of the United States," end quote. The other two candidates, Representative Lee Zeldin from Long Island and former Westchester County Executive Rob Astorino, both gave non-answers, refusing to say the truth or lie about the election. But Zeldin is already on record, as on January 6, he voted against certifying the election results and supported the lie on the historical record. Read more about this story in the New York Post.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that New York health officials will review services provided by facilities statewide that offer pregnancy-related care but do not provide access to abortions or contraceptives. The effort is part of a package of laws approved this month by Governor Kathy Hochul and comes as the centers have been the subject of suspected attacks, including one facility in Erie County. Quote, "We need to be able to identify where these gaps and other gaps in health care and pregnancy-supported needs are," unquote, said State Senator Brad Holyman, the Senate sponsor of the measure. Under the law, the Department of Health will review the facilities, which often provide services such as ultrasounds. Quote, "In many parts of New York, there are far too few options for people who are pregnant and the need for low-cost pregnancy care and contraceptive resources," unquote, Holyman said. The law was approved as these facilities have come under alleged attack. In western New York, a fire broke out at Compass Care in Erie County, which officials say was an arson. Holyman called the incident an example of why the state should have a better understanding of these facilities. Quote, "Any violence directed at these clinics is completely unacceptable. That's why I think it's more important than ever that New York State step into this void," unquote, he said. The New York Catholic Conference's Kristen Curran is worried the effort to study these facilities will make it more difficult for them to provide services to women in need. Quote, "We just fear that it's really designed to be onerous and force these centers to turn over all kinds of paperwork and really make them struggle more than they already do," unquote, Curran said. Read more about this story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com.
That U.S. District Judge May DiAgostino has dismissed the challenge to the state's Human Alternatives to Long-Term Solitary Confinement Act. The new rules, which went into effect April 1st, limits a person in prison's time in segregated confinement housing, will remain in effect despite the lawsuit from the New York State Correctional Officers Union. They claim that eliminating solitary confinement removes disciplinary action and increases the likelihood of prison assaults and violent incidents. The court disagreed. DiAgostino said the court, and I quote, "recognizes the serious dangers corrections officers face," end quote. But she added that it, and I quote, "strains credulity to allege that the 14th Amendment's guarantees that no state shall deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law imposes a constitutional obligation on the state of New York to use solitary confinement against individuals under 21 or over 55, or that New York State is constitutionally obligated to allow use of solitary confinement of prisoners for more than 15 days at a time, end quote. NYSCOPA President Michael Powers disagreed. Powers said, and I quote, "Despite the ruling, we will continue our campaign to repeal HALT by organizing our membership to vote out those in the legislature who supported the act. Once the legislature is back in session, we will focus our efforts on repealing HALT or amending HALT to strike out the dangerous portions." NYSCOPA continues to strongly oppose any portions of HALT that limit DOCCS's ability to separate dangerous inmates from staff and other rule-following inmates, end quote. Read more about this story at the Auburn Publications website.
Bill Williams reports for Columbia Green Media that 10 fire companies from Columbia and Rensselaer counties were involved in fighting a large brush fire on June 20th in Stuyvesant. More than 6.5 acres of land were blackened by the blaze, Stuyvesant Fire Chief Steve Monty said. At about 4:09 p.m., Columbia County 911 sent Stuyvesant Fire Company to Ridge Road after receiving reports of the fire. Upon arrival, fire officials requested mutual aid assistance from neighboring fire companies, and a request was also made for brush fighting equipment. Smoke from the fire could be seen miles away. Crews were able to get the fire under control after roughly an hour. The blaze started when the field was being brush hogged, and the mower struck a rock which sparked the fire, Monty said. There were no reported injuries, the chief said. Fire companies from Stuyvesant Falls, Kinderhook, Niverville, Stockport, Valencia, Castleton, Skodak Landing, South Skodak, and Stottville, as well as the Valencia Rescue Squad and State Police assisted. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Olivia Beavers and Meredith McGraw report for Politico that there is now a full-on feud between Representative Elise Stefanik and New York's Republican Party Chair Nick Langsworthy. Stefanik quickly backed Carl Paladino, who has a history of racist statements, to fill a Buffalo area congressional seat. Then Langsworthy announced he would run himself for the congressional seat of resigning Republican Chris Jacobs. Then things got messy. The story says, and I quote, "Langworthy's political director for the state party restricted fundraising and voter contact data Stefanik's team could access before the Republican National Committee intervened to restore it, according to one person familiar with the matter. Stefanik's team suggested the RNC stop sending money to the New York GOP to pay for staff and instead hire New York-based RNC paid staffers." This person added, insisting on anonymity to address the feud candidly, end quote. National Republicans are saying there is no problem. RNC spokesperson Emma Vaughn said in a statement that the National Party Committee, and I quote, "has great partnership with NYGOP Chairman Langworthy and Republican Conference Chair Stefanik," end quote. Paladino, who Stefanik is backing, is seen in a 2021 video calling Adolf Hitler, and I quote, "the kind of leader we need," end quote. Redistricting has Stefanik representing Rensselaer County if she is reelected in November. Read more about this story at Politico.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
And now, here is your WGXC weather update. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Wednesday, a chance of showers with thunderstorms also possible after 1 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 72 degrees. Wednesday night, showers are likely and possibly a thunderstorm before 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with the temperature low of around 58. And on Thursday, a chance of showers and thunderstorms, mostly cloudy with a high near 75 degrees. And Thursday night, isolated showers before 2 a.m. It will be mostly cloudy with the temperature low of around 59 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM. Radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Wednesday, June 22nd, tune into all sorts of creative community voices on the air at 90.7 FM, including Evan McCormick. He's the newest WGXC broadcaster. His show's called Music in Time, and at 10 a.m. on Wednesday, it features the New York album from Lou Reed and talks about what was going on when it came out and more. And Maria Manhattan has the Hudson Cafe at 11 a.m. And at noon, Spike Priggen is live from Catskill on Main Street, where his Spike's Record Rack is located. He does his Bedazzled Radio Hour for 2 hours after the local news at noon. Then at 4 p.m., we go live to Acre with the WGXC Afternoon Show. At 7 p.m., we are live from New York City with the Hacker Quarterly 2600 and their show Off the Hook about technology and hacking. And then at 8 p.m., we're live from Europe with the Radio Art Zone. All night, overnight, all sorts of radio art from artists around the world on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page. And copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
You can find all about the Hudson-based circus, the Bindlesif Family Circus, on the WGXC community calendar. They're hosting the Bindlesif Circus's Summer of Joy 2022 in Hudson, with 5 different programs for youth ages 6 through young adults, including circus art intensives for youth and participation in the Hudson Black Arts and Cultural Festival Parade. Also work on costume design and fabrication. They host the Hudson Juggling Club at Waterfront Wednesdays in Hudson, and a restorative justice facilitation training with the Hudson Youth Center and the Restorative Center of Newburgh. These programs run from June 29th to August 24th, You can find out more on the WGXC community calendar online at wgxc.org.
Podcasts get made locally at wgxc.org, as all WGXC's locally produced programs can be subscribed to and found in all the usual podcasting places. Tune in for a mind-expanding radio from local news to a travelogue of sounds, either live at 90.7 FM or anytime at WGXC.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, June 22nd. Early on, it looks like temperatures range from 55 degrees in Durham to 59 in Stockport. Soil temperature is at 61 degrees. Looking at the radar, it looks like a bowling ball of precipitation is heading down from Canada. Which pin it hits is anyone's guess, so plan for rain in case it picks your neck of the woods. A high of 71 happens at 3 p.m. Overnight will be muggy with temperatures falling steadily till they bottom out at 58 degrees Thursday morning. More rain happens during the day, getting stronger in the afternoon. A high of 72 is expected. Overnight, the rain stops, but it will still feel muggy until Friday starts warming up, hitting 83 with a nice dry afternoon. Weekend is looking warm with some rain coming back on Sunday. Pollen levels for today will be low. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 5:05 a.m., high tide at 10:38 a.m., low tide again at 5:22 p.m., and high tide once again at 11:20 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 72 degrees. Sunset today will be at 8:20 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:16 a.m. Looking way up, we see things are quiet with solar wind speed currently at 489 kilometers per second at 12 protons per milliliter. Radio propagation conditions are currently terrible till dark, then fair below 15 megahertz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 3, quiet. The current sunspot number is 104. And this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Lynn Sloniker of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Cheryl Kay, host of the Jazz Disturbance on WGXC 90.7 FM. Listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. The Jazz Disturbance features jazz and other improvised music. Tune in on the 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 5th Sunday of each month from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on 90.7 FM, wavefarm.org/listen, tune in, and on the Wave Farm Radio app on your smartphone. Playlists are posted at facebook.com/CKDisturbance.
KZMB, all zombie radio.
We'll be right back.
Local music from Troy there, from Jason Wolfman Martin. That was the song Space Vixen Sex Lasers from his 2022 EP Test Signal.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
The on-scene commander waited for radio and rifles. Then he waited for shields. Then he waited for SWAT.
Steve McCraw, director of the Texas Department of Public Safety, spoke to state officials during a Texas Senate committee hearing on Tuesday. He called the police response to the mass shooting in Uvalde an abject failure. The Senate, including 14 Republicans, voted to advance its bipartisan gun bill, which includes enhanced background checks for those younger than 21, funding for mental health and school safety, incentives for states to implement red flag laws, and limits on the boyfriend loophole. Democratic Connecticut Senator Chris Murphy.
This is a breakthrough. And more importantly, it's a bipartisan breakthrough.
At the fourth hearing by the January 6th committee on the 2021 attack against the U.S. Capitol, Fulton County, Georgia election worker Ruby Freeman testified on the threats of violence she faced in the aftermath of the 2020 election.
Do you know how it feels to have the President of the United States to target you? The President of the United States is supposed to represent every American, not to target one.
After the hearing, California Democratic Representative Adam Schiff praised Georgia and Arizona officials and election workers.
People got to see these courageous public servants, but also I'm glad they got to see the danger that the president's lies put elected officials in all around the country.
Republican Wyoming Representative Liz Cheney urged the U.S. Department of Justice to pay attention to the evidence the committee is presenting amid an ongoing debate over whether the committee should send a formal criminal referral to the department. Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm is slated to meet with oil executives on Thursday as the administration seeks solutions to lowering sky-high gas prices. White House Press Secretary Karine Jean-Pierre confirmed plans for the meeting in a briefing on Tuesday. The meeting would include all seven executives that President Joe Biden wrote last week, urging them to boost the supply of gasoline and diesel. Biden spoke about delivering vaccines to American children aged 6 months to 5 years old. He encouraged people to get vaccinated and Congress to provide additional funding for pandemic preparedness.
The United States is now the first country in the world to offer safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines for children as young as 6 months old.
I'm Nadia Ramlagan for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Tom Roof from Wave Farm with the Daily Radio News. For years, corporate radio officials have claimed that airplanes will fall from the sky because of the scourge of pirate radio. But no plane crashes have been attributed to an illegal broadcast. So when the Federal Aviation Administration and airline industry officials recently began saying airplanes could fall from the sky because of 5G signals, it sounded like another conspiracy theory. Airplane altimeters tell pilots plane altitudes and rely on spectrum from 4.2 gigahertz to 4.4 gigahertz. That is close to where 5G signals get sent, between 3.7 to 3.98 gigahertz. So unlike FM transmissions, which are not nearly as close, it is conceivable for faulty transmissions or receivers to cause problems. And it turns out many planes have older altimeters that were designed before the age of so many cell phone signals. That led to the Federal Aviation Administration objecting to the Federal Communications Commission's authorization of 5G networks near airports earlier this year. Now John Brodkin at Ars Technica reports that the FAA has announced a plan to replace or retrofit airplane altimeters that can't filter out transmissions from outside their allotted frequencies. The FCC says interference in altimeters was unlikely to occur, quote, under reasonable scenarios, unquote, and that the aviation industry should conduct more research, quote, on why there may be even a potential for some interference, given that well-designed equipment should not ordinarily receive any significant interference, let alone harmful interference, given these circumstances, unquote. The FAA seems to be conceding to the FCC that the problem really is not that large. Quote, during initial negotiations in January, the wireless companies offered to keep mitigations in place until July 5th, 2022, while they worked with the FAA to better understand the effects of 5G C-band signals on sensitive aviation instruments, unquote, the FAA said last week. Quote, based on progress achieved during a series of stakeholder roundtable meetings, the wireless companies offered Friday to continue with some level of voluntary mitigations for another year, unquote. But the airline industry is mad that they are being made responsible for the issue. Quote, at today's FAA roundtable, we were told that the vast majority of our fleet, approximately 4,800 aircraft, would need to be retrofitted by July 2023, unquote. Airlines for America, a trade group that represents the major U.S. airlines, said in a letter to the FAA, quote, given that the FAA has not even approved solutions nor have manufacturers manufactured these products for most of this fleet, it is not at all clear that carriers can meet what appears to be an arbitrary deadline, unquote. Read more about this story at Ars Technica. Go to waveform.org for more radio news.
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Would you like to do a show on WGXC?
Chocolate pigs.
Did you hear that?
No.
Here is 2022 new music from Jason Wolfman Martin out of Troy, New York. This song is called Nobody Hears It from his album Test Signal.
Has never been made. Nobody hears it, hears it, hears it. Nobody hears it, hears it.
next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
We're joined by Grace Nichols, a longtime environmental and other justice activist here in the Capital District. Did a lot of work with Save the Pine Bush. Now a law student over there in Maine, and also a former science teacher. June 20th to 26th is Pollinator Week, and I just received an email from Grace about the need to protect pollinators. So why are you into pollinators, and what are pollinators, Grace?
Because I think people don't always understand the breadth of it. Currently, we're in a period of insect decline. Arthropods across the genera, meaning your bees, your moths, your butterflies, your dragonflies, all flying insects are decreasing. And those are the bedrock pollinators. But they're not the only ones. There's also the birds that depend on the insects. There's also the bats who depend on the insects. And there's also even beetles. Crawling insects also pollinate because they climb all over the plants and get the pollen everywhere. So that whole world of the creatures that have evolved with flowering plants and who transfer pollen from one plant to the next are our pollinators. And they're in serious danger at the moment, which is why we're celebrating them and talking about all the ways that we can improve their health and keep them here with us.
So let's start off at sort of the individual level, and then we'll do the more, I guess, global or macro level. But, you know, what can an individual do, you know, if they want to help, promote better living conditions for pollinators?
The research is very clear that the drivers of insect extinctions are, one, habitat loss, two, pesticides, in particular, neonicotinoid pesticides, and we'll talk about those in a minute, three, climate change. And four, water pollution, because a lot of insects have their larval phase in water. And also they interact with water in their garden and such. So the ones that you as an individual can do something about, or of course anything we can do to reduce our carbon footprint is going to be very helpful. But more than that, the habitat crisis has accelerated in the last couple of decades for numerous reasons. One is that the industrialization of the third world has increased the cement cover all over the planet, but also the intensive methods of agriculture have removed a lot of nectar and host plants that the pollinators depend on. So a host plant is the plant that the pollinator or insect will lay its eggs on, and which will nurture the baby insects, which are the larvae, the caterpillars. And those are necessary for the survival of the plant. And they're also very specific to the insect. So it really matters what kinds of plants we have out there. And then the second is the nectar and the pollen plants. And there's a little wider range that insects can use for that. So we'll talk about what kinds of plants we want to be planting. And so increasing habitat is the leading thing we can do to help our pollinators. And the way we can do that is plant native species that have not been exposed to pesticides and plant them wherever you can. We want to make sure that our backyards are full of pesticide-free native plants. We want to make sure that our community gardens are full. We want to see that every roof in our city is covered with plants. We'd like to bring the host and nectar plants back to the farm, and many farmers are in fact doing that. But what we need to do more than anything is increase the plants available to insects so they have what they need, so they aren't starving and they have a place to raise their children.
So I assume then we don't want the manicured putting greens in the backyards. But if people want to figure out, well, what are, you know, sort of the good native plants in my area, what's some ways they can determine that?
Oh, sure. Well, I'm going to tell you just a few of the common ones. For example, any goldenrod that's native to your area, you should plant. Any sunflower, In fact, the asters, the whole Asteraceae family of plants are very good for nectar. Believe it or not, stinging nettle, because host plants are specific to butterflies and moth species, but a whole clump of butterfly species will use nettles. So if you can stand to do it, if you can put a little patch of nettles in your yard, that's going to be something for caterpillars to use. But caterpillars also like cherry trees. They like willow trees. They like oaks. They like dogwoods. They like any kind of milkweed that's native to your area. So in our area, we have a lot of them. We have swamp milkweed. We have butterfly milkweed, which is so pretty. It's bright orange. Joe pie weed, cardinal flower. These are just some of yarrow. These are just some of the plants that butterflies and moths can use, and other insects also really like, and bees are very fond of. Lupin is one, a very good one for bees as well. But to find out the full list, there's a couple of ways you can do that. One is to go to the website of Xerces, X-E-R-C-E-S, Xerces Invertebrate Conservation. They are a leading organization. They really were leaders in saying that we have to pay attention to animals without backbones, to insects. And they've done a great job, and they have guides for every region. But also, Albany County put out a pollinator plant guide. And it was our activism and our pollinator-friendly county resolution that made them do it. So you can look at, on the Albany County pollinator website as well. And then a third thing that I really would urge everyone to do is join our Facebook page. We have a Capital District Pollinator Allies Facebook page. And on that page, we post all sorts of really cool stuff and a lot of things about Pollinator Week. We want to invite you all to an international pollinator power party that's going to take place online from the 20th through the 24th. And that's amazing. Did you know that the Cherokee Nation is planting pollinator plants everywhere and trees all over the nation in Oklahoma? Well, they're going to talk about that. And then South America has a entomologist who's going to talk about the South American effort to bring back the pollinators. There are efforts all over China, all over Africa, and Europe has actually been able to ban neonicotinoid pesticides, which are so dangerous for insects. But the United States, with its huge American chemical industry lobby, has not been able to do that. And that's really to our shame.
So we only have about 2 minutes left. So you mentioned, obviously, trying to eliminate, reduce pesticides. What are some of the other, you know, macro things that, I guess, more on the advocacy level that people can be, you know, trying to get their local, state, federal government to do?
We really can't get around the reality that the intensive forms of farming, everything from GMOs that are Roundup Ready plants that allow them to drench the fields in glyphosate, to the neonicotinoids that make the sap and the pollen, the nectar of the plant toxic for 36 months, meaning that three generations of insects will die from trying to just feed on those plants. Those are some leading reasons why we're having plummeting insect numbers so fast and all over the world. But another reason is the inavailability of appropriate plants, that native plant species are in short supply, and we need to really take responsibility to grow those and grow them under pesticide-free conditions. So we do need grassroots people to pull out greenhouses, plant native seeds, untreated native seeds, and make those plants happen. There's just a shortage. And I actually have friends who've started greenhouses and they sell out in the first few weeks every year because people want to plant native and they don't have the plants. So it's a burgeoning business and something everybody can get involved in. Here in Maine, there's even more of a shortage of native plants. And the wonderful, wonderful compost program, Garbage to Gardens. They're a wonderful grassroots group. They just spontaneously decided to put up greenhouses all over their compost facility and grow native plants because they realize that it's an emergency.
We've been talking with Grace Nichols, law student, environmental advocate, former science teacher, and this has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
On June 20th, Tompkins County Democratic Committee held a candidate forum for the New York 19 congressional candidates Jamie Chaney, Josh Riley, and Ocean Zotik. Here is an excerpt from that candidate forum. You can go to the WGXC newsroom online at WGXC.org for a link to the entire forum.
Political polarization in America is very high, and the list of issues is long. Abortion, guns, transgender rights, COVID measures, all that. Choose a polarizing issue and, giving some examples, talk about how you would navigate the divisions you will face among your constituents and your colleagues in Washington. Josh Riley, your response on political polarization.
Yeah, you're not going to like this, and this might be the lawyer in me, but I'm just going to dispute the premise of the question. I think the question actually gets it wrong in the sense that you're asking us to focus on the most polarizing things and talk about that. What I want to do when I go to Washington and what I want to talk about is all of the places where there's actually areas of agreement between folks, because we are right now just being torn apart at the seams by extremists and debates around some of the most polarizing issues. And on those, like, look, we need to stand up and fight really hard for our principles. So when it comes to something like Roe v. Wade and protecting a woman's right to choose, there's not a compromise to be had on that. That is a fight we are going to fight. When it comes to things like protecting our kids in schools, there's not a compromise to be had on that. We're going to fight that fight. But it's also simultaneously true that there are so many problems and so many challenges this country is facing where there's a lot of room for bipartisan agreement and there's a whole lot of common ground. One example that I like to talk about from my time working in the U.S. Senate was a situation where advocates who ran battered women's shelters were coming to my office and saying, look, we're getting a lot of folks who are survivors of domestic violence coming into the shelters. And what was happening is survivors were calling to enforce temporary restraining orders. The police would come. And then the next day, the landlord would say, look, I can't have the sirens and the disturbances. You have to go. What I just told you, that is not a partisan issue. That's not a polarizing issue. That's not a Democratic issue or Republican issue. It's an issue about protecting folks who are vulnerable and in need. And so even at a time when Congress was hopelessly divided and everybody was focused on the big blow-up issues, we were able to bring Democrats and Republicans together to write a law that basically said, if you're a housing system and you're getting federal money, you cannot evict somebody just because they're a survivor of domestic violence. And we brought Democrats and Republicans together to do that and get that signed into law. And so I think we need to focus a lot on the areas where we have common ground and start working together on those.
Thanks, Josh. And next, Jamie Chaney on question 7, political polarization.
I share, and I want to share Josh's premise that we do share more in common. And I'm going to truly believe that, because we need to move forward from there. For my sample issue, let's take a rep. I'm a 4-H mom, and I have a network of 4-H moms across the state. For those who don't know, this is Youth Livestock Showing World. And I do feel it gives me a real-time focus group, because I will tell you that very few of them are on Democratic County Committee calls anywhere in the state tonight among my fellow 4-H moms. And I was with the 4-H moms the week after the Roe, the leak came out. And I said to them, as we're standing on the sidelines of a livestock show, like, guys, like, don't you care about this? Doesn't it upset you? What they all said is, actually, you know, I believe everyone should have a right to choose. But it's kind of like number 11 or 12 on my list of things I feel really strongly about right now. And this is where I think we as Democrats have progress to make. We can't tell people it needs to be number one and tell them to brush the other issues under the rug. And so then, of course, I said, what are the other issues? And the ones that popped up in various combinations were these. The wall that I keep talking about, if people can't figure out how they're going to feed their family tomorrow and next week, they feel like it's a luxury to think about choice. So we need to have a hard conversation about the fact that fuel prices are high, that milk prices are going up, that it costs money to drive the 2 hours to the doctor. We can't say Roe is more important than those things. The other one is guns. I'm going to be very open that this is what comes up. We haven't gotten gun legislation through because the NRA is awful. We can have a whole Zoom on that later, but also because we've pushed gun owners away from the table. I am very open that I am a gun owner. We have a gun on our farm. We put a single bullet in it. We use it when a calf is born deformed or a predator is in the barn. We need to, in the same breath, say, we're going to protect the fact that you may be in a situation where a gun is a part of your culture or something you use as a tool. We ban assault weapons. In vilifying everyone and pushing them away from the table, we've not been able to have a conversation.
Thanks, Jamie. And Ocean, the response on question 7, political polarization.
Yeah. So when I reached out to Marcus Molinaro to schedule a bowling match with him, one of the things we got to talk about was how unfortunate it is that there's such a polarity and polarization between this identity of being a Democrat or being a Republican. And I won't speak for somebody who's not here, so I'll continue to speak from my own point of view now. But for me, as a certified neuro-linguistic programming coach, I know that mindsets are extremely powerful, and that by framing various difficult topics in different ways, I found a lot of traction. For instance, speaking with my neighbors that are Republican women about negative rights versus positive rights. They are not comfortable thinking about abortions happening. However, in my platform, and I'm obviously wearing my Ruth Bader Ginsburg dissent collar every day until reproductive justice is the settled law of this land, by the way, I noticed that I got a lot further when I talked in terms of there's no way that the government has a role telling us what to do with our uteruses. That focus got me a lot further than saying we need to protect abortion. I don't think there's any question in this room what needs to happen. But I found that shifting our mindset and beginning to use language in different ways while staying obviously focused on our mindset or on our values can go a long way. And there's proof. When marriage equality became a settled law in the city of New York and the state of New York, Republicans supported that, including Mayor Bloomberg and others, because it was a negative right. The government had no business telling me the gender of my spouse. There was no need to endorse same-sex union or opposite-sex union. The government had no business in that zone.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Unicorn, meet the ballot mule. This mythical creature only appears when you've lost an election or if you want to tighten voting restrictions to make it harder for the disabled, the elderly, and working parents to vote. An investigation by ProPublica tracks the term ballot mule to 2020 election denier allegations of widespread ballot delivery schemes by third-party voter advocacy organizations. The conspiracy theory, amplified by former President Trump, alleges groups and individuals harvested ballots from people who might not otherwise vote and dropped multiple ballots off in drop boxes. ProPublica reports that wanted posters with the images of alleged fraudsters went viral on social media platforms, resulting in online threats. In Arizona, there was a call for vigilantes to find and prosecute alleged ballot mules. But ProPublica found no evidence of wrongdoing by the individuals pictured, and around the country, election officials found no such activity. ProPublica also found no evidence that social media platforms did anything to stop the lies from spreading. Disinformation campaigns like the ballot mule contributed to dozens of states tightening restrictions for voting by mail, delivering ballots to drop boxes, restricting or eliminating drop boxes, and increasing required documentation for voting absentee, all making it harder to vote and based on a myth. ProPublica's article and an article on the voting restrictions on the disabled community are linked at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. For the American Democracy Minute, I'm Brian Beal.
I'm Tom Rowe in ACRO with the WGXC Renewable Weather Forecast. And we start each forecast off with fossil fuels and the lowest price for a gallon of gasoline in Greene County, according to Gas Buddy. Citgo in South Cairo currently has the lowest price listed at $4.86 a gallon. Then we check out what the local air quality forecast is for Wednesday, and it's 30, inching a little higher, but still in the good category. The National Weather Service in Albany says there's a 20% chance of showers on Wednesday, possibly a thunderstorm after 2 p.m. with cloudy skies, a high of 65 and a low around 56. Thursday, again, there are showers likely, a 60% chance. Thunderstorms are also possible after 2 p.m. with cloudy skies, a high of 68 and a southeast wind 5 to 7 miles per hour spinning local windmills. Low is predicted to be around 56 on Thursday night with a 30% chance of rain. Then Friday should be mostly sunny with a high of 77 and a low around 57. You're listening to the radio WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, solar-powered radio for open ears. Next, we hear local music from Poughkeepsie's Joe McPhee. He took his saxophone into his closet during the pandemic quarantine and produced a 2021 album called Route 84 Quarantine Blues. This is the title track.
Thank you.